Blog Talk Radio.
Take stuff from strangers.
Oh, well, I'm Pennywise the Dancing Clown. Now we aren't strangers, are we?
I should get going now.
Oh. Without your bow?
Every time I hear that, I still get a little freaked out. Welcome, everybody, to Cinema Royale. I am Travis Hobson of the Punch Drunk Critics. And on this show, of course, we're going to be talking about It, which I think is going to be it's going to be huge this weekend if it isn't already. I haven't looked at the box office yet. But it's a remake of – and not necessarily a remake. It's a straight adaptation of Stephen King's novel. It's not a remake of the 1990 TV series, thank God, which I actually watched some of last night. And it's, you know, it's just, I wrote it in my review, but it's simply not scary. It never really was. It had a couple creepy moments, and Tim Curry's version of Pennywise became sort of iconic for, you know, the evil clown. But I think this version is far more terrifying than Tim Curry's was. But we'll talk about that a little bit more in a few minutes with my buddy Matt Razak, who's going to be sticking around for a little bit because we're going to talk about something else that's scary going on in Hollywood, and that's whatever the hell is going on with Lucasfilm and Star Wars, because they let somebody else go now. And this time it's Colin Trevorrow who's left Star Wars Episode 9. And this has become sort of it's become a trend. This has happened a lot. Don't forget, they had the issues with Josh Trank when he was making his spinoff film. They had issues with Gareth Edwards on the Rogue One. He was basically replaced by Tony Gilroy during the reshoots. And they had Phil Lord and Chris Miller, who were fired from the Han Solo movie in mid-shoot. I mean, this is not something we've really come to expect for Star Wars, but there's a reason for that, and we'll talk about that after we finish our It review. So me and Matt are going to discuss that and discuss a couple of possibilities for people who could replace Trevorrow on that film. Ryan Johnson's the front runner right now. I'm not necessarily sure that he's going to be the guy. We'll discuss that a little bit more. So thank you for tuning in to the show. We took last week off for Labor Day weekend. And of course, I come back this week and I wake up with a headache and I still have it. So if I sound a little under the weather this morning, that is why. I'm kind of running at half speed today. I get these debilitating headaches sometimes and shit just happens. And, you know, this is one of those days, but I'm not going to miss out on another week of shows. It's not going to happen. So I am here. And thanks to all of you who have also been tuning in to Critical, the Movie Critics Network on Blog Talk Radio. We are going strong. We're doing really well. I appreciate it. We're growing. I love the feedback we're getting from everybody. Keep it up, man. We love hearing from all of you. We've got a lot of great shows there for everybody. If you, like I always say, whatever kind of movie fan you are, I think there's a show for you on Critical. So go ahead and check us out at Blog Talk Radio. We are in the networks section. You just look up Critical. We are there. You can find us also on Facebook. So you can find us pretty much anywhere. All right, let's go ahead and bring in my buddy Matt Razak to talk about it. What's up, Matt?
Hey, how you doing? I mean, I'm
okay.
A terrible headache.
I know. I was just commenting on Facebook that waking up with a headache is the worst. I just whenever I get them, I know they're going to be around all day. They don't go away. They just kind of stick around.
Yeah.
Probably not until I go to bed tonight. So, yeah, it's going to be one of those days. Hopefully they'll go away while I'm watching football or something. Maybe the Bears will put me to sleep, and I'll just
you're into a Browns game, and you should be.
Yeah, so maybe that'll help out. But anyway, but you and I are going to talk about it today, and we're also going to talk about Star Wars because
that's
the far more interesting topic. But it is the big movie for this week, and I think there have been more Stephen King adaptations this year than I think there have ever been at one time. I mean, there have always been a lot King adaptations, but this year it seems like there's more high-profile ones than ever. You agree?
Yeah. Oh, and all over the – I mean, and TV and, like,
movie,
he is all over the place. I mean, and, you know, there's good reason for that. His stories are awesome. I mean, he's just a great writer who does – and they're not just awesome, they're easily adaptable into other mediums because they are so tightly written and, you know, so well, and for the most part, well paced. So it's easy to turn them into movies.
Right. But the thing that's interesting about the ones that are coming out this year, I mean, what do you got, Mr. Mercedes on TV, or you have The Dark Tower last month, or this, and there's another one coming out in a few weeks, another movie coming out in a few weeks, which is a name I don't remember off the top of my head. But a couple of them aren't the so easily adaptable variety. They're the difficult.
That's true.
Ones, like The Dark Tower, which is one of the most unwieldy projects ever. Yeah, we're talking 20, 30 years of writing spanning multiple genres, and multiple times people have tried to make it and been unable to. And now this, it, which, you know, other than the 1990 miniseries, which I think did a reasonable job. Like I said earlier, it's not particularly scary, but it did a reasonable job of adapting the material. And then you have this version now, which is also going to be a two-parter, taking a stab at it, which is, you know, it is a massive book. And
there's a lot going on in it.
there's a hell of a lot going on in it. And then this version, you know, directed by Andy Muschietti, who did Mama a few years ago, which is a great horror movie. Really good. This guy has a thing for the genre, and you know, he's about as perfect a pick for this movie as there could be. He does some really smart things with this, and I think that make this one stand out. And I took some heat from my review where I say that it's basically like one of the best King adaptations I've ever seen. It's really, really good, but he captures the mood of Derry, Maine better than I think I've ever seen it on screen. You know, a lot of King's stories take place in Derry, but this one is, I think this one gets how, like, deep down the ugliness and the evil of Derry is better than almost anything I've ever seen. It's subtle. It's not always about Pennywise. It's in the actions of the people, their disregard of everything that happens. There's a lot of little things that happen in this movie. And, you know, like the kids who are in this losers club, you know, are basically being terrorized by this clown. But throughout the city, kids are being kidnapped all over the place. They're bullies, literally cutting kids. And, you know, the people just have this blatant disregard for everything. The corruption is so deep down in Derry. And Muschietti, I think, just handles that so perfectly.
Yeah, I think one of the things the movie did really well is capture that a lot of King adaptations don't always do is capture the tone and the sort of horror undercurrents of his books. And there's like, you know, there's so many, he's got like the sexuality things and it's like, it's a deeper evil, you know, that's not scary jump out of a closet scary. It's like disturbing scary. You know, you come out of it feeling disquieted. And I think that's what it really does. I actually came out, my initial reaction coming out of the theater was, that's not that scary. And then 2 hours later, like, it was still permeating in my thoughts and creeping me out. And I was going, you know what? It's not that it's not scary. It's that different kind of scary that sticks with you, you know, not the kind that makes you jump every 10 seconds, but the kind that sticks with you for 2 hours and then beyond those 2 hours of the movie. And so the next day you're thinking about it, and the next week it comes into your mind, and, you know, you see like something clown-like out of the corner of your eye, and it creeps the heck out of you because the movie stuck with you because it had that tone to it and that underlying constant fear and level of disturbingness, for lack of a better term there.
I totally agree. I hope people don't go into it thinking, I hope that this is going to be one of those jump scares for the movies. I think that's actually when the works the least, is when it actually does that on the few times that it does. But it's one of those movies, like you said, that gets down in your bones, sort of, you know. And I was posting pictures of the new exclusive Pennywise Funko figure, and I was like, yeah, I kind of want this, but then again, I don't know if I'd actually I don't know if I'd actually want it out anywhere.
Because keep it locked up in a closet. I own it. I'm never going to look at it again.
Right. And I'm like, I want to own it, but I don't think I want to have it out because I might actually see it. And I,
yeah.
And that's goes to the effectiveness of the movie and the effectiveness of Bill Skarsgård as Pennywise. And what did you think about his version of Pennywise the Clown? Who's, like I said earlier, Tim Curry's version has become iconic over the last 30 years, basically. Whenever you think of evil clowns, you think Pennywise. And it's his version of it that you think of. What do you think about Skarsgård's version, though?
It's not Tim Curry. So that's like the first, because Tim Curry's so iconic. Like, you just have that locked in your mind. And so at the beginning, it was like this. It felt awkward to me. It felt like, oh no. But by the end of the film, I had so bought into his different creepiness that I'm actually excited to rewatch it. So I won't be, so that like the sewer scene, I won't be thinking, I don't know, Tim Curry did it Tim Curry's way. And Tim Curry is, you know, you can't, no one else can do Tim Curry.
It's getting used to how Bill Skarsgård does it. Let's play a little bit of that again real quick for people to hear. As you can hear, this is the opening.
Hiya, Georgie. What a nice poem. Do you want it back?
Yes, please.
You look like a nice boy. Do you want a balloon too, Georgie?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers.
Oh, well.
See, I mean, it's you hear it, and it's you're thinking, okay, is he going to be a little too goofy, a little too jokey here? You know, that it's not going to work. But I mean, that's the disarming part of it. I mean, literally for that scene, the disarming part. you know, is that he's that way. And, you know, so it kind of lets your guard down too. You know, so you're kind
and
of
I actually
thinking
like
yeah, this is going to be silly. It's like, oh, he's, yeah, that silliness is kind of terrifying. But go ahead.
I was going to say, he layered it a bit more than Curry's is sort of just like this level evil clown thing, but he sort of layered it almost like it was like there's this malevolent evil that's taking the form of a clown, but doesn't quite understand. Like, there's just these like little ticks here and there where he's like unable to like keep up the clown facade. And I thought that was a really cool, especially in that opening scene with Georgie, a really cool twist on the character where it's like, yeah, I realize, you know, the Pennywise isn't the evil. The evil is this it, right? It's an id. It's not an evil clown. And, like, I think he put a little twist in there where, like, it was this evil in a clown, but not quite getting what a clown was and not quite able to keep that smile going all the time because he was, you know, annoyed with the kid or something.
He just wanted to grab him or something. It so wants to just be itself, like, it seems at times.
Yeah.
Like, it just wants to, like,
exactly.
Like, screw this facade. I just want to chomp on you right now. Like it does get irritated at times, but it has to put this facade. I wish you could understand why it feels like it has to, but I guess, you know, that's a deeper question for the tackle. But it does seem like he gets irritated at having to be this clown and having to go through these games at times with these kids.
Yeah.
But that's also how he feeds himself too. He feeds off the fear.
Right.
That's how he does it. I guess I just answered my own question. But anyway.
I was going to say, you mentioned the box office earlier. I believe on Friday it pulled in like 56 million or something, which is the biggest R-rated movie opening, the biggest September movie opening, and the biggest horror movie opening ever. So it is on pace to break every R-rated September horror record ever by the end of the weekend, by today, I guess.
It's going to do extremely well. And I think one of the big reasons that it feels like an extended episode of Stranger Things.
Yeah.
It really does feel that way. They moved the setting from 1950s to 1980s. You're right in that same sort of time period. You got the group of kids, including one from Stranger Things, Finn Wolfhard, from Stranger Things is in the movie, you know, and it has that same sensibility, the pop culture references in there. And, you know, I love the boy band references in there are really funny, but, it really does feel like Stranger Things. And I think that was a brilliant move on their part to capture something that is, you know, red hot and familiar to people. So it goes beyond guys like you and me who remember the old version and appeals to people who are, you know, to people of a different generation.
Well, and I'm sure there are people screaming right now at listening going, Stranger Things feels like it, you know, the book is this childhood adventure.
Please.
But they did a great job of, morphing it into
Stranger Things borrows from it quite a bit, but I would say that this particular version of it is borrowing from Stranger Things.
Yeah, it's like samurai movies and westerns. They just keep on swapping inspirations back and forth,
right?
for eternity.
Exactly. All right, so definitely, I'm going to say that it is the movie to see this week. It's a great film. I actually want to go check it out again, unless you want to go see Home again, I guess. You want to go see that.
I missed my screening. Oh, no. It's not getting panned. People seem to be saying it's okay, but I'm not that excited for it.
It's not really okay, but I'll talk about that a little bit later.
Good to know.
I mean, I guess if you like Nancy Meyers movies, but you don't want them to be quite that funny or even less believable than those were, then Home Again is for you. Anyway, all right, let's take a quick break. If you and I come back, you and I, we're going to kick around this Star Wars thing because there's a lot going on
with
Lucasfilm lately. Stuff that I think a lot of people are unprepared for dealing with when it comes to Star Wars. So let's take a break. We'll be right back. Back. you guys know, whenever I play that particular bumper music, we're going to talk about Star Wars. and this week has been another surprising week for Star Wars. The time is Star Wars Episode 9, which saw director Colin Trevorrow let go, or he actually left. He left the production. It apparently was mutual. And a lot of details have come out about that ever since. And we don't need to get into the meat and potatoes of why Trevorrow left. Basically, they said that he was, you know, he had become unbearable and there were creative differences, whatever. I boil it down to the fact that, you know, he did a really crappy movie like The Book of Henry, and you shouldn't deserve to do a Star Wars movie after directing The Book of Henry. I think that's what it boils down to, really. Whether they say that or not, I think we were all kind of saying, wow, Book of Henry is really terrible. And this guy's doing Star Wars? I'm worried. I know I said that moments after Book of Henry was over. I said, I'm worried about Star Wars 9. And apparently I wasn't the only one. so I got Matt Razak here at Flixus.com with me, and we're going to talk about this some more. But this is interesting, Matt, because we've seen a lot of this lately from Star Wars and Lucasfilm. It goes back to Josh Trank with his spinoff film that he was unceremoniously fired from. Then we saw Gareth Edwards basically removed from Rogue One and during reshoots replaced by Tony Gilroy. We saw Phil Lord and Chris Miller let go from the Han Solo film in mid-shoot. And now this is not something that we usually see from Lucasfilm. And you know, I've heard people be confused by what all this is going on. And I have to remind them, remember before this, one, they were only, it was all George Lucas.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to fire him? Who's going to tell him to go away? I mean, it was basically one guy. I mean, so that you didn't have these kinds of issues. If it was his vision 100%.
Right.
So there was never going to be a situation like this. And we saw the result of it being that way when those prequels were so bad and people didn't like them.
Yeah.
You know, there was nobody there to be like, you know, this isn't that good of it. This is a pretty bad idea. You should do this. There was no way there to correct
that.
Right, exactly. There was no way there. Kathleen Kennedy was still around during those times, remember? She was still a part of Lucasfilm. But she couldn't tell him that. She couldn't. Now she has that kind of power. Now she has the power to be able to do things. And she's using that power. She's using that power, and when people don't match up with her vision, she's not messing around. She's letting them go.
The other difference is that studios are now thinking in terms of cinematic universes, and cinematic universes are wholes. They are not separate parts for the most part. And you need a vision, and that vision you can diverge from it slightly. You can dabble in other genres. I mean, and this is all from the Marvel playbook, obviously, but you can dabble in other genres and you can go in varying different directions. But if you're making a cinematic universe, it needs to be complete. It needs to, you know, it can't be jumping off the rails into something completely different, or, you know, and that's the thinking. I might not agree with that entirely. I think you could go a lot of different directions. But she has a vision, and that's the vision for this universe. And if it's not going to work out, then she's saying that it's not going to work out, and we're going to go with someone who can give me the vision that I think this universe needs. And so that's what's driving these changes, I think.
But you see that the people that they're letting go of, look at the people that have been let go. Josh Trank. He directed one really good film in Chronicle, then one crappy film in Fantastic Four. Rising Star, Rising Star director at the time. Doesn't seem like he's been now.
Probably not anymore.
seems like he's gone the way of Troy Duffy here at this point.
Yeah, you don't do Fantastic Four and get to film another big movie for, you know, a decade or more.
Josh Trank gone. Gareth Edwards, hey, directed Godzilla. He directed Monsters, then Godzilla. It was his big breakthrough, big film, and then was given the keys to Rogue One. And while that movie turned out better than I think people thought, they still ran into issues, and he eventually got the reins pulled out from under him. And then Phil Lord and Chris Miller, you know, fan favorite directors, but they're like the other two guys. They are people who have their own style and their own approach. Yep. And, you know, and these are very heady, you know, kind of independent minded filmmakers, all of them. And that does not seem to be meshing with the Disney Lucasfilm machine. And that seems to be an issue. So
Which raises the question as to why they brought those kind of directors in the first place.
Let's look at it from another perspective, though. They also have Rian Johnson, who is exactly the same director, and it worked out flawlessly for him, supposedly, on Star Wars, you know, Star Wars 8. It seems to have worked out.
And everything he said is that he loved it and it was the best experience ever. So
right. And so I guess it's going to depend on who you get. But I would also say that Rian Johnson is the most experienced filmmaker out of all of those people, out of all those ones we've seen before. And he's the most experienced at doing multiple different genres. So maybe he was more adaptable to what they would have wanted. Rather than those other guys, Phil Lord and Chris Miller, you know, they're fluid in comedy. And that was apparently their biggest problem. They wanted to make it such a stone cold comedy that the kid was like, I don't know, this isn't looking right. So I don't know. I guess it just depends on the filmmaker. But I guess what I'm worried about is that, because look at the people that they replaced Phil Lord and Chris Miller with Ron Howard. I think is the most milquetoast director out there. It's not bad.
Yeah.
He's made a lot of great movies. But he's just
He
will get the movie done. Right. And then on this new spinoff they're doing, they got Stephen Daldry, who's never done this kind of movie before, but I don't necessarily think of him. I look at him the same way I look at Ron Howard, which is I don't see him as somebody who's got much of a fingerprint. I'm worried that they're going to stop being aggressive and giving opportunities to rising star directors instead just go with the safe option.
I mean, you get burned too many times. What are you going to, and you know, Ron Howard comes in and gives you the movie you want. And you know, I think a good path forward would be to give, so assuming there's going to be 10, 11, 12 episodes, 10, 11, 12, give those anchors to folks they trust. Maybe, you know, milquetoast people. And then on the spinoffs, on the Rogue Ones, on the origin stories, whatever they're doing, that's when you give it to an artistic director. But I don't, even then I'm, you know, it's just not as exciting then. I would love to see, you know, something different out of each episode directorially, but if you give it to the blander directors who just sort of know how to hold down the fort, then you're not going to get that out of it. But the big problem is, even if they deliver three middle of the road Star Wars movies, they're going to make bajillions of dollars. Everyone's going to go to them. And because they're middle of the road, no one's going to be upset by it enough to stop going to Star Wars movies. from their experience, there is nearly no benefit to hiring innovative up and coming directors.
Right. And that's a shame. That's a damn shame.
Yeah.
I mean, I agree with you. It seems like the trilogy films are best if they're giving to one guy to kind of oversee all of them. I mean, it just seems like that's the best vision to have, you know? And then when I think back to George Lucas, even though I don't think he is necessarily a director with a distinguishable style, the one thing that he was somebody who liked to push innovation. So his movies always felt forward thinking, even if the particulars of them weren't like his technologically, visually, they always looked like ahead of the curve. I look at him as sort of like James Cameron in in that sense, you know, in that, in that regard, they're very similar. Even if as a filmmaker, he's not necessarily like if he did a romantic comedy, it probably wouldn't look like anything. Like it would look like a Nancy Meyers movie. It wouldn't look like anything special, but it visually, he was really good at pushing boundaries. I think that was always his sort of thing. I would want somebody like that on the trilogy movies. You know, I want somebody like that. Even if he's not like, he doesn't need to be Quentin Tarantino, but if he's, you know, pushing the boundaries visually,
pushing,
then that would be,
which is what
that would be,
and
great.
That's what Star Wars has always done. I mean, the original trilogy, episodes 4 through 6, those were boundary pushing technology things. That, you know, that's. Mm-hmm. You know,
and even the prequels were, even though we
that's a major chunk of it, right?
Yeah, the prequels were too. Even though we derided them, they weren't very good. But you know, in terms of the technology he used, we complained about a lot of stuff he changed and a lot of stuff that he did, maybe too much digital effects. But he was doing it to you know, to kind of move things forward. You know, and I appreciate that much of it.
Definitely, if anything, George Lucas has a vision and he sticks to that vision, which is which is. Admirable. It can create really bad movies, but he knows what he wants and he does it, basically. That's what those prequels were. And you know, to a fault.
And I think Kathleen Kennedy has sort of that same mindset. She knows she has an idea of what she wants. And we can't forget Disney's hand in all of this, of course, too. Disney is the overall lord of these movies. Which is something else you didn't have to deal with before either. Like I said, it was solely George Lucas. Now there is a corporatization of these movies that we didn't have before, and there's going to be changes because of that. And that's not always going to work with every filmmaker. It's just not. It's never going to work with every film. So but guys like Ron Howard, it'll work for him all day. It'll work for him forever. He'll be fine with it. but not everybody else. I feel like I'm shitting on Ron Howard just because I know. He's not a very exciting director.
It's not an insult. I mean, I think one of the things that this shows, that these falling apart, and you know, it's not just with Star Wars, but it's with, Marvel's had their fair share of cutting people off, and obviously DC has had issues with their directors, and a lot of blockbusters have been running into these directorial problems, especially when they're pulling up these up-and-coming directors. And what is showing is that these big action movies aren't that, you know, it's not easy to make one. It's not easy to wrangle this job and pull together a quality action movie and big budget movie. So the people who can do it might be fewer and far between than we know. And that might be what these studios are finding out, because they are putting out so many of these films now.
Exactly right. So let's talk about people who could possibly replace Colin Trevorrow on this movie. And Rian Johnson is the front runner. That seems to make sense, because he seems to have done such a great job on 8, and there were like no production issues that we've been privy to during that film. It seems to have gone smoothly, and that seems to be what Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm want more than anything else, is for these things to go smooth. Mm-hmm. He seems to be the front runner, and I like that. I would be perfectly fine with that, because Rian Johnson has been arguably my favorite director ever since he started. I loved 500 Days of Summer. I loved Brick. I loved The Brothers Bloom. There's been no movie I've seen in theaters more than I saw The Brothers Bloom. The only one that ties it is Rogue One. I saw both of them like 5 times in theaters. So I love Rian Johnson as a director, and I can't wait to see The Last Jedi. If they went with that route, I'd be perfectly fine with it. And then, like I said before, the trilogy movies seem to me like they should be a singular voice more than anything else. So I would be happy with that. But one name that came up to me when I was thinking about somebody who could take on, you know, a big blockbuster movie, has experience, is David Yates. You know, the guy who did the Harry Potter movies. He did four or five of them. Mm-hmm. He did the last thing he did was the Tarzan movie, which I think was okay. It wasn't great. It was perfectly fine.
Yeah, it was Tarzan.
Yeah, it would have been better if it cost half as much as it did, because it actually made a lot of money, but it just cost so goddamn much that it didn't, it broke even practically. But it was a good movie, and I think he's a guy who has everything that Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm seem to want, which is an experienced filmmaker, experienced these kinds of movies. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's not somebody who has a history of production problems. He just sort of gets the job done. And there's been no other franchise more unwieldy than the Harry Potter franchise. Expansive
well,
as that was.
He was the one who corralled that, because they had, he took over on 4, right?
Yeah,
It was Quran on 3.
Mm-hmm.
Which was, 3 is visually the best, and probably
it's great. It might be the best of them all, actually. It's a great movie.
It's fantastic. But to do the next 4, right, 7 in total, five, you needed someone to corral that all in. I don't think he was the guy who could do that, and Yates did. I mean, he pulled it all together fantastically. Not with the artistic flair that Quran made 3 with, or sort of the emotional punch, but with enough. He got a just massive, massive franchise to work, which you can't even overrate. I mean, it's really impressive.
He did a really good job of making that world his own. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Prisoner of Azkaban, that feels like a Cuarón movie. Like the first two movies by Christopher Columbus are pretty bad. I mean, they're not very good.
They're clunky.
They really, really are. Like a lot of Christopher Columbus movies are, actually. They're clunky. But they're clunky. And then Cuarón came in and sort of said, okay, I'm going to take this one movie. Because there was no way a guy like him was going to do more than one. But, I'm going to take this one movie and make it my own. And he did. And then Yates came in and was like, I'm going to take this franchise and make it my own. And he was able to separate himself from Cuarón's. And kind of establish this world. And when I think of the Harry Potter movies, I think of David Yates' version. All the way through to the end. I didn't really get tired of seeing it either until even all the way to the end. When I got back into when Fantastic Beasts came out, I was excited to see David Yates' version of that world again. which is not something that easily happens. You know, usually you're like, okay, I want to see somebody else tackle this. Like, think Transformers. By the last one, we were all kind of like, I'd like to see somebody else do these movies other than
someone else. Yeah, handle this.
Right, but I don't feel that way about the Potterverse and David Yates yet.
That's actually really good. I had not thought about David Yates. That's actually a really good. Really good person.
Although he's probably tied in with Warner Brothers for rest of his life.
Yeah, I'm sure he's a little busy.
Never going to happen. But
he's got things to do.
He's a little busy. But if Lucasfilm could pluck him away somehow, I think he'd be a great pick. Maybe for the next trilogy, because I think he'll probably be free of Fantastic Beasts by then. I think that one's a trilogy, and I think the next one comes out in the next year. So he might be free of it by then. They could pluck him away for the next Star Wars trilogy. I think that would be a solid move on their part.
Yeah.
You got any options for Star Wars 9?
We did a piece on this for Flickus, and my bit of it, he might not be the best choice, but I could. If they brought back George Lucas in the right way, I could support it. Because for the reasons you were, I know it sounds hilarious, but for the reasons Star Wars was so much his vision, right? Yeah, and it was so like in his direction. And so if you can bring him back in the way he controlled the episode, the first trilogy, episodes 4 to 6, where someone was checking him. Someone was saying maybe this would be a better idea, which I think you could have more of because he'd just be the director. He wouldn't be the end all and be all, right? If you could do that, I think
that's exactly why it will never happen.
Yeah, right, exactly. We already know he sort of doesn't like the direction they took his baby in. And so I would kind of like to before I think what one of the issues we're going to have with Star Wars down the road in a few years is it's just going to get way oversaturated and not be as special that way. And I think if you brought him back in to directionalize a bit more and because he's really good at that universe building and at those ideas. It's just the final execution he needs help with. And I would not be against him being brought in to direct 9 to sort of get the universe focused and so we don't get burnout on it. You're going to laugh for 5 minutes and tell me I'm an idiot. But
I don't need to.
I can
we already,
see Lucas
I already,
working.
I already put my thesis in that it would never happen for all the reasons that you gave. All the reasons you gave for why he would be a great pick are also the reasons why he will never do it.
It would
because,
never, right, yeah.
It's not his. It's not his. He would only do it if it were his. So I don't need to say anything more than that. I would like to see F. Gary Gray get a handle on this. I like F. Gary Gray as a director. I always have. I think he did a great job on the most recent Fast and the Furious movie. I think I'd love to see an African American filmmaker get a shot at Star Wars too. On a selfish level, I would like to see that happen. I know there are a lot of other people out there that want to see a woman take on Star Wars. Yeah, that'd be great too. I can't think of other than like Lexi Alexander or maybe Karen Kusama. I can't think of another woman director that I want
you,
to see
you
on
put
Star Wars.
Patty Jenkins in there?
I like Patty Jenkins. I don't necessarily think she's great just because she made Wonder Woman. I think Wonder Woman's a good movie. I don't think it's a great movie. But I don't know. I like those two directors I mentioned better than Patty Jenkins in general. I like them better than her in general. And I think they would have made a good to great Wonder Woman movie also. I would love to see those two. And that, plus I think they're adept at the type of material too. But I don't know. I would like to see them. But going back to F. Gary Gray, I think he's a solid filmmaker and I think he showed his blockbuster chops with the most recent Fast and Furious movies. So I would like to see him do it. I hope nobody mentions Justin Lin. I hope that name doesn't ever come up. I've already seen it come up in other pieces on this because there have been a shitload of those pieces, as you can imagine, after this movie expired. So there's been nothing but who could direct Star Wars 9? It's like Justin Lin. I'm like, no, stop using his name. No.
I don't like Justin Lin for Star Wars 9. I could put Justin Lin in one of a spinoff, right? Like an action-based spinoff that's just an over-the-top Star Wars thing set in some, I don't know, it's just on some planet and they race Jedi cars.
A speeder bike.
Right. he does that, and he does that so well. And it would be awesome in a Star Wars universe.
Was he made a podcast?
Right. Yeah, there you go. That's fine. Good. Yes. Oh, my God. Fast and the Furious Star Wars. It's done.
That would be.
Right. No, but.
And you know what?
Yeah.
That tagline, that, Fast and the Furious pod racing, that tagline sells.
Yeah.
That
tagline
sells itself. That tagline sells itself. It's Fast and the Furious meets Star Wars. Boom. You walk into an office.
We're done.
You walk into an office. Yeah, you walk into an office with that. You walk into Lucasfilm headquarters with that, that's a movie that's getting made.
Yeah, no doubt.
Maybe we should go to Lucasfilm and pitch that. I think we could sell that. We could sell that idea, I think.
I like that. We're going to be rich, Travis. Rich.
I know, man. Hey. I like F. Gary Gray. Did you have another pick? Did you pick somebody else?
So I would So
who else is on your list?
We discussed Patty Jenkins. I think she'd be a good choice, but again, one of the reasons I think she'd be a good choice is because she'd deliver the movie that was wanted, because I think that's what she can do. Moving on from her,
I agree with you on that. I'm not saying she's a bad director. I think she's a good director. I just like those other female directors better than her. That's all. But go ahead.
The Russo brothers are already under Disney's rule, so you just pull them over.
Oh, yeah.
That one's super easy. Again, they can deliver the movie you need. I don't know if I don't think they've got any. I would love to see more out of them that isn't Marvel because the movies we see from them are so Marvel. I don't know their like personal direction at all.
You never saw Welcome to Collinwood, huh?
No. Yeah. Right. I don't know anything outside of.
Don't worry. Most people didn't see Welcome to Collinwood. That's where I first went. It was a bad movie, but it was a bad movie with George Clooney. That's really like all it was. It was like a bad movie with George Clooney in it. a bad comedy with George Clooney. But it was nothing like. That's why people were totally unprepared for the Winter Soldier, because it's like, how are these two guys who made this movie back then? How are they making this? Because the action is so incredible in that film, and then the action was so incredible in Civil War. And you're like, how are these the same guys? And I've interviewed them twice, and they're like, they can't even explain it. Like, I'd like ask them that question. Like,
they didn't know it was in there.
Right. Like, where did this come from? They don't seem to know either.
They can get it done. And then I'll just do two back to back, but my never going to happen, but it would be. And again, maybe not for the main trilogies, but for a spinoff. Christopher Nolan doing like an all physical using nothing but models Star Wars would just be, maybe it's just nostalgia for me, but like would just be awesome. having like, a non CGI destroyer fly over the screen again. And like just his sort of attention to detail and ability to take things in it. Cause who's going to say no to Christopher Nolan? To take things in a different direction, because there's very few directors who have, as we're seeing, who have clout enough to say, no, this is my vision and it's going to go this way to Disney and Star Wars. And Nolan is the only person working right now who has, maybe other than Spielberg.
Right.
Spielberg might be able to say it, but like the only person who could say, nope, my vision, this is what it's going to look like. Here we go.
Right.
It will never happen, but that would be my pie in the sky request.
A Christopher Nolan Star Wars movie would be amazing, but I agree with you. It'd have to be a spinoff, and it would have to be a spinoff focused on one single character, maybe even a character that we are not familiar with.
Yeah,
I would like to see. Yeah. Like, I mean, I think Star Wars needs to go in that direction anyway. It's making more stories about characters that we don't know. Like I don't need to see a Han Solo spinoff movie. I really don't.
Right.
Like, I don't need to know more about his past. I don't give a shit. It's like Wolverine. I don't need to know about where he came from. I already know enough. You know, they teach me that stuff in the process, like in the present. I don't need to go back to another story of him. Like I don't need to see an Obi-Wan Kenobi spinoff either. I don't need to see that.
God.
I know exactly. It doesn't sound appealing to me at all. I don't want
to. It just goes back to the burnout. Yeah, if they're telling new stories, you're going to get a lot more long-term run out of new stories than rehashing old nostalgia. And I know nostalgia pulls people in to watch, but you already got that. You've done it. Start just having the Star Wars title. You've got it, right?
It's already Star Wars. People are going to show up. All I need to do, if you create an inch, create a new character, and the freaking promos show a goddamn lightsaber, and people are there.
Yeah,
you don't need to show anything else. You know, you just need to.
Yeah,
you don't need to do that much to rope people in. I mean, I think there'd be more excitement for a brand new character too. Look at the excitement they got out of the brand new characters introduced in The Force Awakens.
Yeah.
Like Rey and Finn. You don't need to use the same old people we've already learned enough about already.
And The Force Awakens was that bridge, right? That movie was, it was a rehash of an old story. It was a both metaphorical and literal handing off of the baton from one Star Wars generation to the next. So, they told that story. They built that bridge. It's happened. And now they need to – that is what – so much rests on how good episode – what they do with episode 8 and how good it is. Because if it goes in a new direction and if it is really good, then that lessens the concerns for what they're doing going forward. If I come out of 8 and go, oh, they've got the vision to change this franchise and turn it into something new, not just rehashes and nostalgia, then I'm less worried about their decisions to ditch directors and change directions, because that means they have a vision that I think is going to work. If I come out of episode 8 going, no, you're just making Star Wars over and over and over again, the original trilogy, then I'm going to be concerned, way more concerned about the directorial issues they've run into again and again.
Could you imagine a Christopher Nolan directed Dark Knight trilogy style, trilogy?
Oh yeah.
About a guy becoming a Jedi. Told in three parts. The first part would be very, very Batman Begins-esque. And then kind of go all the way through his progression to becoming a Jedi, whether he ends up good or bad. We don't know.
And we already know that Nolan likes guys talking funny through masks, so he'd be great with Darth Vader and Stormtrooper.
He could probably get Tom Hardy to play the role.
Yeah.
He could probably get anybody he damn well wants to play that role, to be honest.
I do have to be a little bit selfish. Not selfish, but because Nolan has already said he wants to direct a Bond, and because this is Craig's last one, and Nolan has said that if he's going to do a Bond, it's going to be a reset, then I don't want him to go over to Star Wars, because basically, I can't believe the producers, once Craig leaves, aren't going to go straight to Nolan and be like, "Hi, make a James Bond." Why wouldn't you? So, that's my real wish.
I think they'll probably ask him. I always think about all the lists I've read. The names they keep popping up all the lists are goddamn near the same. Yours is the only one that I had the head George Lucas on it, to the best of my knowledge. But the other names,
I'm a genius.
Well, that's one way of looking at it. It could mean something else. The same names are always on there. Michelle McLaren. People want to see Michelle McLaren. I don't necessarily. Game of Thrones, great, whatever.
Yeah.
Bad, whatever. Edgar Wright's always on there. I think Edgar Wright would be a terrible choice for Star Wars, for the same reason that Phil Lord and Chris Miller were a terrible choice for Han Solo. For the same reason he didn't work for Ant-Man, he wouldn't work for Star Wars. So yes, we would like to see it, but no, that would never happen. So I wouldn't even say it. But a guy that I actually think could bring the humor of somebody like Edgar Wright and still fit into the Star Wars mold is Taika Waititi, who's doing Thor Ragnarok right now.
Yep,
I wouldn't mind
yep.
him Star Wars movie.
He was on our list. Yeah.
Okay, great. Yeah, he'd be a guy. I think he'd be a great pick.
I think so too. I haven't seen Thor yet, but just from the trailers.
Yeah.
But
he has a signature style. He has a signature style, and
exactly.
if he could work within the Marvel machine, he could work within the Star Wars machine.
Yeah.
Someday.
Exactly. Yep.
And still have his sense of humor.
Did you see his tweet?
Oh, yeah, he did kind of
make
fun of it, didn't he?
Yeah, someone tweeted at him. He said, nope, I'd be fired in the week.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, he knows, but still, it'd be
right.
I think he'd be a good choice for it. And I had another idea in mind. Oh, James Mangold, I think, would be a great choice. also.
Yeah.
Just based off what he's
done. Here's my way out there. I think you could bring in Takashi Miike to direct a gory samurai style Star Wars episode 9.
You're never going to get a gory thing.
No.
So,
yeah. Well, and he wouldn't do it because lightsabers cauterize runes right away.
but thinking along your lines there, I think Mangold is actually better suited to the kind of movie you're thinking of. Because Mangold is the guy who does westerns, and the Jedi culture are very interlinked with the samurai culture.
Mm-hmm.
Remember, there was that rumor about the Seven Samurai style Jedi movie that Zack Snyder was going to direct. Remember that rumor from a few years ago?
Yeah,
I would still kill to see
that
movie. I would still kill to see that movie.
It would be awesome. I mean, Rogue One was a bit of a samurai film in and of itself.
It really kind of was. It did have sort of a samurai vibe to it, especially in the way it did. But I agree with you. But I think Mangold would be better suited to that kind of movie. I think he could make it.
He
makes great Western-style movies. 3:10 to Yuma is one of my favorites.
I haven't seen 3:10 to Yuma in forever. I'm going to go rewatch that.
I watched it maybe about a year ago. It holds up really well. It's really good.
Yeah.
But between that and what he did on Logan, I think he could make an awesome Western style Jedi movie for Star Wars.
Yeah.
So I think out of all the people I've mentioned, Mangold would be the guy I would most like to see do a spinoff type movie. Yates is the guy I'd want to see do like 9 or, you know, like a core movie. But Mangold on a spinoff would be amazing, I think.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. Just a solo Jedi film in that sort of Western samurai style would be just fantastic. Especially in the, I guess you could do it flashback style, or sorry, in the time like right before, while the Empire still stands, but there's like scattered Jedi.
Yep.
So before the original trilogy, just like, you know, a Jedi rolls into some planet town and has to do, and the entire story is just that town. Like, it's not a big, huge fighting the Empire story. It's
maybe,
just the Star Wars story.
Or maybe, and this might be even more exciting, maybe, because I think the Jedi will be reborn after this new trilogy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Luke is obviously the last Jedi right now. Rey is going to be the beginning of a new breed of Jedi, a new group of Jedi.
Mm, yeah.
So they'll be reborn after this, maybe after that takes place, you know, brand new character. Jedi been reborn, you know, and you have this one guy who's kind of off on his own. I think that'd be a great story to tell. And we are almost out of time. I didn't even realize that. We've been talking about Star Wars for the last 40 minutes. So I had to let you go so I can get out of here too. But it's been a great conversation, Matt. This has been a lot of fun talking about it and talking about Star Wars.
Yeah.
Definitely, I think we're going to have a lot more to talk about when it comes to Star Wars because they haven't named the director
one
yet.
Or two things.
Yeah, one or two things. So I'm definitely going to have you back on. We'll do this again. So
cool.
Everybody, go check out Flixus.com. Go read why Matt thinks George Lucas would be a good choice to come back. And then feel free to comment. Feel free to comment on it.
Thank you so much.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate you coming on.
Yeah. I'll talk to you later, man.
All right, later. All right, and that about wraps up the show. Thank Matt Razak of Flixus.com for calling in. We just spent about 40 minutes talking about Star Wars. That was great. I need to do that again. Definitely, for sure. All right. I'll be back next week. This has been Cinema Royale. Where's my outro music? There it is. This has been great. This is Cinema Royale. I'm Travis Austin. You can find me every day at PunchDrunkCritics.com. And, you know, check out Cinema Royale on Blog Talk Radio. And it's part of the Critical Movie Critics Network on Blog Talk Radio and on Facebook. I will see you next week.